It's Friday, February the 26th, and you're very welcome to the Inside Politics podcast from the Irish Times. I'm Hugh Linehan. With me today are political editor Pat Leahy. And Pat, you're here with us because this is a week of polling. We'll be talking a little bit later about the state of the parties, as revealed in our Ipsos MRBI poll. But first, a lot of concentration in today's newspaper on the public view on the pandemic and government strategy thereof. First off, some good news, I think, in that there seems to be widespread willingness to take the vaccine.
Yeah, I think it's 80% of people say they would take the vaccine tomorrow. 3% have already taken it, and 14% say they would not take the vaccine tomorrow. Now, you know, I suppose on the face of it, that's a not entirely insignificant minority of people who say that they won't take it. But I think if you look at these sort of numbers, you have to look at them in a dynamic context, and saying you will not take it, you would not take it tomorrow, is not the same thing as saying you will never take it. And certainly once you go above 80%, then you're getting at the type of levels that the epidemiologists say will give you immunization. So I think that is, I mean, my first thought when I looked at that was 14% say they won't take it. You know, is that a problem? And it's higher across some of the subgroups. But having spoken to people, I think that's a reasonably hefty number, and certainly better than you are seeing in some European countries at the moment. For example, in Germany, where, you know, there are stocks of vaccine like lying unused because of vaccine reluctance on people. Most people in Ireland seem to be, and this is borne out by anecdotal evidence, most people seem to be absolutely gagging to take it as soon as they can.
Now, the thrust of most of the questions in the poll is broader. It's about people's attitude towards what government strategy should be over the next few months, reopening, the speed of reopening, if that is to happen, and different policies which might be applied, and what might reopen and not reopen. The headline today says describes this as strong support for reopening society as soon as possible. Maybe you could go through a couple of those numbers.
Yeah, so just by way of explaining where, like, we came up with this structure for the poll in discussions both in our own organisation and with the pollsters. I think the next phase, if you like, in the management of this pandemic will be a set of decisions on how quickly the lockdown is eased. As the vaccine rolls out, as the current lockdown, as the effect of that, which we're already seeing on suppressing cases, deaths, easing pressure on hospitals, and so on, as that continues to take effect, then the question will become, and I think the big public policy question for the next month, 2 months or so, is at what rate you reopen up. So we asked a series of questions about general attitudes to that and about specific attitudes to it, in terms of the various aspects of the lockdown, and you know, we see results that I think show kind of quite a, you know, a nuanced view on behalf of the public on schools and on construction. There's very strong public support for reopening. I think we can fairly say as soon as possible. 44% saying they want the schools open immediately. Now, we know that's not going to happen, but that's where the public is on it. And if you look into the breakdowns on that question, you see it's very heavily driven, not surprisingly, by people with people of parental age or of the age where they're likely to have children in school. So 44% saying they want that reopened immediately, 36% before the summer. Similarly with construction, 43% wanted reopened immediately. Again, we know that's not going to happen, but that's the public preference. 45% wanted open before the summer. And again, interestingly, you look at the demographic breakdown on that question and you see there's very strong support for immediate reopening amongst young people, because of course they're the people who are, my assessment of that is that that's because they are the people most who are most acutely aware from their own circumstances of the housing shortage. If you go beyond those questions, though, and you look at things like retail, pubs and restaurants, much less support for an immediate opening with those 15% on retail and non-essential services, 6% pubs and restaurants want them reopened immediately, but 55% of people want retail and non-essential services open before the summer. You go on to things like travel, visiting other people's homes, travel outside the country, travel outside your own county, for example, 24% reopen immediately, 50% open before the summer. So I think if you take all these together, and the global question, the global question of, you know, are there too many restrictions at the moment? Just less than a third of people saying there's too many restrictions at the moment. 43% saying it's about right. 24% saying not enough. If you take all those questions together, and you have to try, I think, and draw lessons from the global set of data, it seems to me that there are two forces vying. There's people want to get reopened as soon as possible. But as soon as possible means when they think it's safe to do so. Now, when is it safe to do so? So go and look at the question that we asked about zero COVID, the living with COVID approach versus the zero COVID approach. So we asked, you know, do people want to reopen, get back to normal once the vulnerable and the elderly are vaccinated? 68% of people say they do. 30% of people want to take the zero COVID approach. And I think the fairest interpretation on that, I know some people will differ, but, you know, people can look at the data and make up their own minds. My view on that is that means that people want to reopen as soon as it is safe to do so. They believe it will become progressively safe to do so once the elderly and the vulnerable are vaccinated. And I think the policy implication of that for the government, which will ultimately make these decisions over the next month and 2 months, is that support for the continued lockdown is likely to abate, and I think possibly abate fairly quickly once the elderly and the vulnerable are vaccinated. And I think that is probably the most important message of the poll.
And that'll be a very interesting judgment to see what they make. But we should say that there has been some criticism of that particular question, asking people to choose between what is described as the living with COVID strategy and zero COVID. I know I saw Tomás Ryan, who's a prominent member of the Independent Scientific Advisory Group, who are promoting a zero COVID policy, strongly questioning the description within the questions. And I do wonder a little bit about it myself, because it describes the living with COVID strategy as, and I quote, getting back to normal once the elderly and vulnerable have been vaccinated. However, most recent information from Neffet, for example, and Dr. Ronan Glynn is he's warned specifically against, I think, what he calls a vaccine trap. In other words, that very idea that you can return to normality once the at-risk groups have been vaccinated, because for a variety of reasons, which I won't go into here, but it's essentially not Neffet's policy and unlikely to be the government strategy. And then Tomás Ryan argues that zero COVID, which is, you know, a contentious policy and is rejected, for example, by the government and by Neffet, but he rejects the characterization of it as saying that it would mean keeping restrictions in place until COVID has been all but eliminated. Because the implication there, I think he's saying, is that we'll just have to wait until after the summer. These are all framed as sort of timeframe questions. But the zero COVID argument, for good or ill, is that with a harder lockdown and really stringent border controls and chasing down community transmission if and when it arises, you can actually open up your country in the way that New Zealand or Australia have done.
Well, you, as I understand it, the argument is you can do that, but only once COVID has all been all but eliminated, was the wording we chose in the community. I mean, I don't want to have an argument with Tom Ryan. He's not here. I did see some of his tweets about it. One of them was citing a different poll in the Journal, which said that 77% of people were in favour of zero COVID. But that wasn't an opinion poll. It was a text-in poll or an online poll with a self-selecting sample. So not really comparable to a poll conducted in the manner that we have. And people can read about the methodology of the poll again. They can make up their own minds on it. I also saw suggestion that, you know, from supporters of zero COVID, saying that NPHET and the government have positions which are firmly in line with the zero COVID strategy. My pretty firm recollection is that both NPHET and the government have explicitly rejected a zero COVID strategy. I mean, on the wording of the question, you know, we went through many iterations of this with our pollsters, and I'm not sure the difficulty with the characterization of zero COVID about keeping restrictions in place until COVID has all been eliminated. I think the wording of the question is fair. I don't think there is any, I mean, given the amount of media exposure that zero COVID, the zero COVID lobby have had, I think most people are probably fairly au fait with their arguments and objectives, and are perfectly competent to make a decision on the desirability or otherwise of it when asked about it. The other part of the question, it doesn't suggest, I think, and nobody would understand that, you know, living with COVID and getting back to normal once the elderly and vulnerable have been vaccinated is an overnight thing. That's clearly a process. And it's also clearly the approach, I think, that is going to be followed by the government. And they've made this very clear that there will be a careful and conservative reopening. That's very much a process. But it is, by definition, both of the government and of the zero COVID lobby, it is different from what the zero COVID people are suggesting. And what we've attempted to do is to gauge the public's view on that. And, you know, we do that in good faith and as fairly and as accurately as we can. The fact that people don't like the results and therefore question the methodology is not really something I can do anything about.
No, indeed. And I think, as always in this podcast, we presume good faith on all sides, including our own, which some people don't. I think perhaps the question, as well as I would have some issues with the wording myself, I have to admit, but it also perhaps illustrates the difficulty of applying traditional polling methodology to some of the questions in all their complexity, which we're confronting at the moment, where you have parameters of disease metrics, of time, of economic issues, political issues, and indeed what's other things that are happening outside the country, vaccine supply. My read of this poll is that generally the people are pretty sophisticated about this stuff at the moment, but it can be quite difficult sometimes to nail down the jelly of what their sophisticated view is on something like a time frame, because it's so dependent on so many factors, and they know that. So it's relatively clear, I think, with these questions about construction sites opening or schools opening, what the public view is, and that's very useful. This one, I think, perhaps is a bit of a leap of trying to think ahead into what people might be thinking in the future.
Yeah, well, we live in an imperfect world, Hugh. But I think that's fair enough. No poll is perfect. I think that this one does add significantly to our knowledge about where the public is at and where it might go to. And you're right, of course, about trying to jump forward and figure out what people will think in perhaps change circumstances in the future. And if it's one thing that we have seen, it's that the public will change their view, sometimes dramatically, on as circumstances with which they are faced change. Perhaps that's not surprising. But I do think that there is sufficient evidence here for the conclusion that we have reached, which is that support for the lockdown is likely to diminish, and diminish perhaps quite significantly, once the elderly and the vulnerable have been vaccinated, in the assumption that case numbers continue to come down and pressure on hospitals and especially ICUs continues to abate. To be honest, you know, my reading of the poll wouldn't permit me to reach any other conclusion. But people may reach their own conclusions, I guess, on it. One final point, I think, about this is that I think we're heading back into a phase in the near future where there will be tension between NEFED and the government once again on the pace of reopening. I think that's probably inevitable, and you know, given the findings of this poll, maybe they will illuminate those arguments a little bit.
In that regard, it is interesting to look across the water, because of course the UK are well ahead of us in terms of where they are in their vaccination schedule. There's a, as always, there's an excellent London letter from our London editor Dennis Staunton in today's Irish Times, which I'd advise people to read. As always, it's very entertaining as well as everything else. But he's had his first shot, and he's describing what his neighbours around him in London, who have also had their first vaccination shot, how their behaviour is starting to change, how they're starting to say, "Oh, you've had yours, I've had mine, maybe we can meet for a socially distanced drink," that some of those restrictions are perhaps starting to slip. And I think that's bound to happen. And that has to be a consideration for the government as well, because it's all very well them laying down the law about what people can or can't do, but there is always the possibility that people will increasingly ignore those restrictions.
And I think that's absolutely true. I haven't yet read Dennis's letter, but I'm not surprised at that finding. And we actually see, you know, lockdown fatigue setting in already. Anyone who walks through the parks of Dublin on a Saturday or Sunday will see that. I heard, you know, reports of traffic jams on Morning Ireland this morning. And it is a significant, I understand from my reporting, a significant and growing fear amongst public health experts that rollout of vaccination will lead to a breakdown in observance of our general observance of the restrictions. And that is certainly a worry. And that is one of the things I think that will be in the mix in the discussions between government and NEFED on the pace of reopening over the coming weeks.
Listen, moving on, we had a number of different questions over the course of the week in our polls. And of course, we had all our usual ones about the state of the parties and the political beauty contest and all of that. And the main lesson I took from this part is that we should just bite the bullet and elect Chief Medical Officer Tony Holohan as leader for life.
Yeah, perhaps not surprisingly, Tony Holohan was getting an 83% approval rating in terms of his handling of the pandemic, against a pretty anemic 45% for the government, 39% for Micheál Martin, 50% for Leo Varadkar, and a perhaps surprisingly healthy 42% for the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly. You know, that's not surprising. Sometimes the function of politicians, I think, is to be a punch bag for the public. Tony Holohan is someone in whom there resides obviously a great deal of public trust. That in itself is going to be an interesting part of what I think is likely to come, which will be tensions between cabinet and NEFED. I don't think those tensions are either surprising. We've seen them before. I don't think that they're either surprising or indeed unproductive. The public health experts think about public health, but politicians have a wider brief, and we've seen these tensions before. I think we'll see them again. But what those numbers tell us certainly is that when it comes to the public's view of the matter, they have a greater degree of trust in Tony Holohan than maybe they do in the politicians.
And overall, the approval of the government's handling of the pandemic, it continues to slide.
Quite a significant slide, really. It's positive rating down 13 points since the last time we asked this question in October. And the number of people who think the government is doing a bad job has increased by 15 points, up to 51%. That probably makes it harder for the government to chart the way out of it. But we have seen that public public opinion changes quickly in response to external, you know, the external conditions, and we may see that again, I think. But there's no doubt that if you look at, you know, say the Fine Gael, both Leo Varadkar's personal ratings and the Fine Gael share of the vote, which was at 30%, the largest share of support of any party, that is still very much a legacy of the public perception that in the first wave of the virus from, say, March until June of last year, the caretaker government led by Fine Gael was adjudged by very many people to have done a good job on that. Now, of course, that was, you know, the first kind of lockdown, keep people stay safe phase of the government's response to it. What has transpired since then has been much more complicated. Reopening is harder than shutting down. But it's quite clear that the third lockdown, the third wave and the third lockdown have damaged the government's credibility as a whole with the public, notwithstanding the differences within the government as between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and the Green Party.
And you were writing earlier this week, in advance of the launch of the new version of government strategy, about what was underpinning it was, or not underpinning it perhaps, was a kind of a loss of confidence in government after this third wave.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, you talk to people in and around government and it's pretty clear that, you know, their confidence was completely shot after the third wave. I think that, again, you know, that will be a factor in the debates with NEFID to come, and will push the government towards, and we see that this week again, towards a more cautious and conservative approach as favoured by NEFID. But I think that dynamic between the two sides would be an ongoing one. Much of it, of course, you know, taking place behind closed doors, but I suppose we'll do our best to shed a bit of light on it.
And then briefly on the state of the parties, if you wouldn't mind, the Fine Gael down a little bit, Sinn Féin essentially within the margin of error, so essentially plateauing. The main number that jumps out is a continuing slide in Fianna Fáil's fortunes.
Yeah, a couple of things I think to be said about the levels of party support. The biggest move was Fine Gael down by 5 points from 35 in October to 30% now. Still the largest or most popular party by the choice of voters. But I think interesting, if you look at the, you know, many of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael's opponents, though the two parties obviously hotly contested, but many of their opponents view them as basically the same, two sides of the same sort of conservative force in Irish politics. But their combined vote is more or less the same now as it was in the general election. Obviously, Fianna Fáil scored a higher share of that vote than Fine Gael did. So the movement in that sphere has been from Fianna Fáil voters to over to Fine Gael, and I think there are dangers for Fianna Fáil at the moment. I mean, we've been looking at this and talking about this for a long time, but if you look at the demographics of the Fianna Fáil vote, you know, overwhelmingly older voters, down to 8% in Dublin. Now, we should say that the geographical breakdowns come from a smaller base and thus should be taken as indicative rather than absolute. But this is something we've been looking at for some time now, and it is clearly a problem for Fianna Fáil. Albeit that if you believe, as their opponents do, that they're two sides of the same conservative coin, then their support is actually holding up. Two other things that I'd say just about the party numbers in conclusion. First is that a little bit of comeback for the Green Party, up to 6%, almost the level that they've had, that they enjoyed at the last general election when they won 7%. Eamon Ryan's rating recovering a little bit as well. So, you know, perhaps it is not a foregone conclusion that the Green Party will be ultimately decimated by its decision to enter government. I mean, that may still be likely, but these numbers suggest that it is not inevitable. The other thing that struck me about it is that despite, you know, a combined 8-point drop for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, there was no gain for Sinn Féin, which came down marginally by 1 point to 28%. Now, two ways of looking at this, I think. The first is that in the year since the general election campaign, Sinn Féin has been really successful in consolidating that newfound support. And that's, that, you know, that's really important. I think that chunk of the electorate is now, you know, Sinn Féin's to lose. But the fact that they haven't gone up when Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are coming down suggests to me that there may be a question as to whether this is the sort of new plateau for Sinn Féin. Now, it's a pretty high plateau to be to have your tent pitched on. But it does suggest, on the evidence of this poll, and this is only one poll and snapshot in time and so forth, that, you know, the inexorable march of Sinn Féin into the 30s, into, you know, into a position of being the largest party, which some people thought was the process we were in after the general election, that doesn't seem to be happening. And if there is a picture that is, you know, delineated by this poll, it is that the old 2.5 party system of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and the Labour Party may be in the process of being replaced by a new 2.5 party system of Fine Gael, Sinn Féin, with Fianna Fáil as the smaller party.
Very interesting indeed. Thanks for that, Pat. Thanks also to Declan Conlon, our producer. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, do drop us a line at politicspodcast@irishtimes.com. But until the next time, thanks very much indeed for listening.